TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I like to be judged by wins and losses. And that's what it's about. This is about winning. And hopefully we can stack some wins on top of each other. Beyond that, we want to see the growth of our young players. And we want to develop an identity. And I think if we can accomplish all three, that's a home run. If we get two out of three, I think that's a great step forward.
All right. Chris Finch, the Wolves have a new coach. It was weird. The way that it went down was sort of uncomfortable.
Be careful what you ask for when you're becoming the Wolves coach and say, I want to be judged by wins and losses.
Yeah,
be very careful.
I want to be judged by moral victories and how many times we don't lose by 40.
I want to be considered as good a guy as Ryan Saunders, so you all like me.
Yeah, I think most... All right, this is sort of where I'm at, and then we can get into what we learned off that press conference, but I've had a chance to think on this for 24 hours since our episode yesterday, and there is something funny about stress, and I'm, by the way, I am guilty of this. I am self-reporting guilt here. There's something funny about stressing out about how this was handled. Like, oh my God, they handled this situation poorly when the franchise has been burning for 15 years.
Yeah, like, I got a thought about that.
Oh my God, look at the garden in front of that house, and the house is like smoldered and gone. And yeah. Oh my God, look at how the Wolves handled their 10th coaching change in 15 years. That was weird. Like, no, they've had 10 coaching changes in 15 years. The whole 15 years has been handled
like,
poorly.
If you want to go back and pick apart that history, let's go back and pick apart that history and spend like 2 weeks talking about it.
I mean, I think if Chris Finch is the right guy, and Gerson Rosas seems to think so, and maybe even thought so 2 years ago, and Glenn Taylor said, well, we should give Ryan a chance because he's cheaper, because he's a Saunders, and because that's what we do here.
And because I really like to screw things up long term.
Yep. And Ryan also, like, I think Ryan's going to be a head coach again at some point. He might have to go work for Eric Spoelstra. But if Chris Finch is the right guy, then I'm not going to sit here and be like, he's the right guy. But boy, they probably could have waited 5 days to give Ryan some space to breathe there, right? So that's where I'm at after thinking about this for a day. The whole house for 15 years has been small.
So here's where I'm at. Number one, I don't believe their timeline for 1 second, okay? Like, I just don't.
What did they say yesterday?
That's fine. Then it came together on, it all came together on Sunday.
Like, during the game.
Like, this is Gerson's best friend in the world. Like, friends for life, right? Yeah, but let's not talk till after a loss someday when I hire you, okay? So one is I don't buy their timeline for 1 second. And you know what? It don't matter. Like, it's fun to talk about and mock, but it, in the big picture, if this guy works, he works. If he does not work, he does not work. But I want to touch on one thing that is being asked about because of the current climate that we're in right now that I find to be really weird. And I'm going to defend the Wolves here, all right? There seems to be this underlying, or not an underlying, but outright, because the question was asked, David Vanderpool, he's black. You didn't talk to him, too? You didn't give him the job? What? Okay. Here's my thought on that. David Vanderpool, right now, and by the way, he might be a great head coach. I have no clue. So I am not passing judgment on him as a coach or a candidate. But after Sunday's game, Phil Mackey, if I call Ryan Saunders up or I walk into his office at the Garden and I say, Ryan, you are fired. It's over. You're fired. How do I sell the prospect of hiring David Vanderpool when he's in charge of the defense?
It's a fair question.
Like, but I understand. Look, the National Football League has a massive problem when it comes to hiring minorities as head coaches, okay? And we could talk about that. And I completely get that problem. And minority head coaches deserve as much of a chance as white coaches. I get that too. But is the story here really you didn't conduct a thorough search and give a very good chance to a guy who's in charge of the Wolves defense right now?
Yeah, I hear where you're going.
Like, what are we doing here? Let's pick the conversation that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough. Like, I haven't been around David Vanderpool, and I get that that's been a huge topic of conversation.
It's funny. Nor have I. Yeah.
Yesterday, I was going around just trying to listen to some, because for the first time in a long time, well, for the first time since the draft, because there was a lot of national discussion about what are the Wolves going to do with the number one pick, and so the Wolves did get some national run leading up to the draft. But it's pretty rare that national basketball podcasts and, like, even The Jump, right? It's pretty rare that national basketball shows are going to talk about the Timberwolves. And yesterday they were, for all the reasons that you mentioned. Reason number one is, wait, how can you just, like, fire someone and then hire someone else as assistant midseason? And then the main conversation in the Ringer NBA show with Raja Bell spent 30 minutes on this to start their show yesterday. Mm-hmm. On David Vanderpool getting sort of done the wrong way here. Why would you bring him in and he's on your bench and he's right there ready? At some point, someone's going to hire this guy. Why wouldn't it be you? He's sitting right there under your nose. And I think the only answer I can come up with is Gerson Rosas looked at both of those guys. I'm sure he thought about David Vanderpool too. I'm sure that was part of the reason why they brought him in, that if we have to make a move on Saunders, at least we got a guy here that is potentially ready to be a head coach. And maybe his opinion of David Vanderpool's coaching, not that he like thinks it's that he's a bad coach, but that in terms of being a head coach, maybe it's different than it was a year ago. We know that Chris Finch has been on the top of his mind for at least 2 years and maybe even longer. And I'll go back to what I said yesterday. I don't think this has to be a poor reflection on David Vanderpool. Like, I don't think it has to mean that, well, they think he's a garbage coach because the defense is terrible. I think it just means what you said, Judd, on yesterday's show. And I agree with this. When you have one shot as a general manager or president of basketball operations, and you've got your short list of people that, boy, all the people I've worked with 10, 15, 20 years in basketball, what's my crew? Who would I put together? For Derek Falvey, it was, I got to get Thad Levine. I got to get that guy in here, right? There's a couple coaches over here. I got to get Derek Shelton in here. And that's how we're going to build a 100-win team. Well, it kind of seems like Gerson Rosas' first shot at that list included someone that wasn't on his list in Ryan Saunders. Maybe David Vanderpool was the second guy on that list. We don't know. But Chris Finch was clearly the number one guy on Gerson Rosas' list. Whether Chris Finch works out or not, he was the number one guy on Gerson Rosas' list going back for 2 years. And this is the move that he wanted to make. Like, I think David Vanderpool is going to get a job. When you have Damian Lillard speaking that highly about you, you're going to get a job at some point. And so I do feel like people are focusing on that more than I thought they would in the last couple of days.
Yeah, and I think, too, if Finch had come here, so if Gerson had got his way and had hired Finch last year, okay, and he was an associate coach in charge of the offensive scheme, and we were where we are right now, and the Wolves really looked discombobulated and offensively not great, I'm pretty sure Chris Finch doesn't immediately get this job. So Chris Finch not being here and being in Toronto helped him.
Just being away from the mess.
But I'm saying we also, I think it's important that we pick our choices of when we talk about why things didn't take place. Now, do I believe that the Wolves are being truthful about this? And do I think for 1 second that Finch and Gerson didn't talk consistently? Of course I don't. Of course I don't. So if we want to talk about the mechanics of the hire and did Ryan get done wrong, that's fine. But I think when we're going to talk about who got the head coaching job based potentially on race, it needs to be a little bit more careful of what's the league trend. And also, again, if you are on a coaching staff of a team that's failing, it's a reflection partially on you. Yeah. Fair or not, it's a reflection.
Yeah. So no, I hear you on that one. I mean, if you want to, like, the real discussion about potential racial injustice as it pertains to coaches in professional sports is the NFL. 75% of the players are black. You got, what, two black NFL head coaches? And then you've got a couple coordinators just staring you right in the face right now that were coordinating Super Bowl teams down the stretch, right? Byron Leftwich, Eric Bieniemy. Like, those guys are getting...
Todd Bowles in Tampa did a great job on the defense. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, those guys, like, to me, that's more of a discussion than the NBA. But, yeah, like, I agree with you on that front. On the timing of it, so this is funny. The timing of it, the Raptors were in town on Friday. And I don't know. I'm not really that, I guess, whatever. Like, I was kind of worked up at the time because, wow, this is a really uncomfortable way of going about this business. But whatever. If you got the right coach, you got the right coach. Cross your fingers. But the Raptors were in town on Friday. Gerson's clearly been thinking. He didn't just have like an epiphany on Sunday. He woke up and he's like, oh, man, it's great seeing my buddy Finchie the other night. You know what? I don't like the way this season's going so far. Man, I should I should call the Raptors and get permission during this game right now and see what happens. I mean, so the way it was painted was Gerson said he reached out to the Raptors for permission to talk to Chris Finch during the Wolves-Knicks game on Sunday night.
Yeah, I totally buy that.
Got the permission. So it just bang, bang, got a hold of somebody right away.
Well, he called the switchboard.
Just bang, bang.
Toronto Raptors basketball, can I help you? Yeah, I'd like to talk to Chris Finch, please. Oh, sure, just hold one second. It's a Sunday. I'll patch you right through.
He makes the call, gets the permission immediately because it's super easy just to get a hold of people on a whim on a Sunday, right? And then not only does he get the permission, he instantly gets a hold of Chris Finch, who's doing nothing, just waiting for that phone call, you know. And says, hey, we're going to hammer out a deal, right? You're good? All right, good. 3-4 year deal. Boom, right? All on Sunday night before the game ended.
The Raptors in season will say, okay, no problem at all. He's our offensive coordinator, but no problem.
This caught us off guard, but yes, go ahead. Just take him.
No compensation.
Yep.
You can have him.
Now, Nick Nurse even, this is, everyone's on the same page because do we have a clip of Nick Nurse, by the way?
We do. So, we have an audio clip, at least I know.
So Nick Nurse did a media session yesterday, too, and everyone's on the same page because even Nick Nurse said, like, yeah, this all kind of came together in the last 36 hours. So his timeline kind of went back to, like,
he looked at
the beginning
script.
Of Sunday. Yeah.
Yes, this came together 34 and a half hours ago.
But you're telling me those guys, and whatever, like, this is how it works. You back channel, you feel somebody out, you say, hey, if something ever became available, what would you think? This is how Judd wound up at 1500 ESPN. Hey, I like my job right now, but like, 10 years ago, we're just drinking beer here. It just, if something were to happen to somebody.
We talked the day I took the job. We didn't talk until then. You called me out of the blue. You called the Star Tribune switchboard, actually. Star Tribune, how can I help you? Yeah, can I talk to Judd Zolgad? And potentially supervisors,
too?
Yeah,
he's available right now. Oh, yeah, it's crazy. He's just been sitting here waiting for this phone call.
Oh, my God. So,
by the way, this is Nick Nurse, the Raptors coach on Chris Finch.
You know, he really is at a high level, not just off. I mean, really, really offense for sure, but not just offense because he's got so many games as a head coach under his belt. He you know, I would say that, you know, just kind of thinking back, he really gets his teams to play hard. You know, they really come after you, both sides of the ball. You know, he's a student of the game, so he's well prepared. He's organized, and I think there's some good talent there in Minnesota.
Good ball guy.
He's a good ball guy.
Oh, he's a big time ball guy. He's a basketball junkie, man. It's steak, tape, and the court for him. That's his life.
I think do the Wolves play tonight or tomorrow?
Tonight against Milwaukee, tomorrow against Chicago, and then they're off for two games and play again. I think is it Friday then?
So obviously you can't really, like, if he wants to bring in a new offensive system,
or Saturday,
he's not going to be able to do that now.
No. He's not going to redo the entire system.
He's going to have to take the system that the players have already known and have been practicing and playing in and make some adjustments to it. It's actually going to be probably more of a cram session for Chris Finch over the next several weeks than it will be for the players, and then he can implement things as they go along. I think he needs to do two things right away. Like, right away, or this thing could go off the rails quick, because I think this is a combustible situation where you have a superstar that wants to win. He's voicing that he wants to win.
Sure.
It's sort of a warning shot to the organization that, guys, like,
the latest.
I care about winning.
The latest one, yes.
I think the first thing he needs to do is build a relationship and rapport with Kat first, and then Ant, Malik, and D'Lo, even though D'Lo is not playing for a couple months, maybe even for the season, but on the fly, he's got to build a relationship with those four guys right away. And Ricky, because Ricky, I don't think Ricky's long-term here, but Ricky's a leader right now, and he's on the team. And it's possible that a lot of these guys either loved Ryan or loved David Vanterpool and think that David Vanterpool got screwed over. So you're coming into this sort of combustible situation where not everyone's going to be like, oh, Chris Finchie! Finchie's in the house!
Damn, anybody seen Finchie?
And then the second thing is, whether you're trying to implement your own offense on the fly or whether you're using the old offense, whatever the offense is, Cat needs to be featured more. I looked this up this morning, boys. He's 36th in the NBA in shots per game.
Mm-hmm.
Third on his own team. Now, a lot of, like, D'Lo's shots went up when Cat was out, so that's part of it. But he's one of the best, most efficient offensive players in the NBA. He should be way higher than 36th in the NBA in shots per game. So if you can build relationships and get Cat more run, those are the two priorities for me right out of the gate for Finch.
So throughout the course of the press conference that Gerson and our guy Finchie did yesterday, there was a lot of just like coach speak at times, right? And Gerson has mastered the art of the, I'm not even sure cliche is the right word, but just the politically correct answer, and he knows how to play that game. So I watched the entire thing, and I didn't learn much, but I think the most important quote came from Finch, and it's the one bit that was completely truthful, and it's ultimately why this change was made, okay? Ryan Cat might have been friends, and the perception when Ryan got the job was that he was going to get the most from Cat, who is the single, again, most important player on this team. He is the single most important player in Target Center, okay? So, when that didn't happen, Finch, who is an offensive guy, like, consider him to be a football equivalent, let's say, of a Sean McVay, right? Like, he's seen as this offensive mind. Finch was hired because of that. So, like, I think the rest of the list beyond Cat, Phil, that you went down will fall into place. And those people are important because those people are part of the team and they're going to be counted on to do certain things. But make no mistake, I think from what Finch said, ultimately, the reason that he was brought in right now and admitted to being on the phone with Cat on Sunday night. So the Wolves call and hire this guy in sort of this rapid fire thing. And the first thing, and it's actually pretty smart, that he is told to do is call Cat.
Yeah, that's good. That's what he should do.
Exactly right. But this is, I really believe, if there was a pie chart of Ryan being gone and a pie chart of Finchie being hired for this job, I think 85% of the Finchie pie chart is Cat. I really do. And I think the rest of it falls in. But Cat is a quarterback who the team's GM knows that he can get more from, and the current coach was not doing it. And so the expectation here is that Finch is going to come in as an offensive guy, and he is going to set the building blocks for an offense that revolves around Cat. And we are going to find out now, and this is important and it's good and I can't wait. We're going to find out now if you can, not just in crunch time and not just in brief spurts, but if you can go through games consistently where we never lose track of Cat, because I felt that that's what took place way too much. There was a huge portion of games I felt during the course of this year where you would watch and you think to yourself, have I seen Cat in a long time?
Yeah.
That's got to change.
I feel like when you watch a Nuggets game, for instance, at most points during the last 5 years, it almost gets way too predictable. Like the rip on the Nuggets offense sometimes, and I bring the Nuggets up because that's one of the three or four NBA stops where Chris Finch has really gained notoriety as an assistant and an offensive mastermind, so to speak. The knock on the Nuggets offense at times has been, man, is it just a two-man game? Is it just Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and the other three dudes just never touch the ball? Almost to a fault. They're running sets, they're running pick and roll, and they're just giving those guys as much usage as possible. And like you said, sometimes you'll go through stretches where it's like, has Cat touched the ball? Like, has he taken a shot in the last 6 minutes? What's happening? I almost feel like it needs to be, until proven otherwise, it just needs to be everything running through Cat, yep. And then whoever your ball handler is, whether it's Ant Edwards or D'Lo, like, let's run pick and roll. And also the other thing too is there's a lot of smart Wolves bloggers in town, and they've been doing X's nose breakdowns, Candace Hoopis, Ki Sang, like there's so many great Wolves bloggers right now. And one of the hopes is because Finch has so much experience in Europe and also in the G League, where sometimes the game can be, you don't have the perfect roster construction, or you've got guys in the G League who are being bounced around on two-way contracts. And it's like, all right, well, who's on my roster tonight and how do we make it work? Mm-hmm. That he'll be able to unlock some of these younger guys too that are on the roster that have shown flashes, like Vanderbilt, for instance, right? Like there's guys who've shown flashes, but it feels like then they disappear for two or three games. Naz Reid is another guy that I think probably could be even more of a beast at some point. So can he unlock? You got all these interesting pieces. It's not a perfect collection and a perfect roster, but all these interesting pieces, and just kind of feels like someone needs to come in and put that puzzle together in a more efficient, effective way, especially offensively.
Absolutely.
And that's the hope. So, Finchy boy.
That presser, uncomfortable. Finchy. Uncomfortable at best.
We have another clip we can play on.
It was uncomfortable.
Let's wallow in it.
Yeah, we have at least a few more.
Let's play a couple more, and then we'll do Twins Tuesday, too.
Great opportunity here with a good young roster. I think it's at the right time to take steps forward in developing an identity. And, of course, I have long relationships with many people in the front office and actually some of the coaches I've worked with before. So there was familiarity and just felt like a comfortable fit.
And I've built these relationships over the past two or 3 weeks. We just talked on Sunday for the first time.
And I will blink twice because I am safe. I am in no danger. I am blinking twice. Gerson's taking great care of me. I love Milwaukee. Like, it's just wildly.
I love Score North, Mackie and Judd. The
best basketball team ever.
I've always wanted to be with the Timberwolves organization. The Timberwolves are the best organization. This is my dream job.
Chris, I need you to blink once if you're in trouble.
I am here on my own volition.
I mean, it was so uncomfortable. It really was.
All right, Gerson went into this knowing full well. All right, we gotta be on the same page we gotta be on the same page with timeline as much as possible. And I'm gonna pump my guy's tires here. Here's Gerson.
The perspective that he has, the time that he's been a head coach outside of the NBA and an assistant in the NBA as well. I think those perspective, those expertises are really important for our organization on both sides of the floor. And his voice, his motivation, his commitment to making this program as successful as possible is important to us, along with his NBA and G League experiences. I think the work that he's done and the players that he's worked with speak for itself.
All right. I'd like to take you both back to May 1st, 2019. If I'm not mistaken, that was the day that Gerson was paraded into a press conference with the media and Wolves employees, and he was announced as the new Pobo of the Wolves, okay? Mm-hmm. And his kids were there running around. He's like holding his kids. And he looks like he is just, he's had a great night's sleep. And this man is embracing the opportunity to fulfill a dream that he had probably had for years, right? Yesterday is the after of running the Timberwolves. The before and after. This is, if somebody
had taken, how it started, how it's going.
Yeah, if somebody had taken Gerson a picture back then of yesterday and said, dude, this is how you're going to look by the time that you bring your guy Finchy on.
There you go, Dex. How it started, how it's going. There's your social media post for the day.
God.
But don't you, like, I remember that pressure. I mean, his kids are like, daddy, dude, daddy, this is the great.
We should almost like,
I hate this job.
We should almost find like the hiring picture, like the introductory press conference for everyone who's been hired as Wolves coach or president of basketball operations.
David Kahn. That's a great idea.
This is going to be great. I'm going to change the franchise forever. And then, like, how haggard they look a couple of years in.
Shirts unbuttoned. Like, there's no tie anymore.
5 o'clock shadow. They've gained weight. Bags under their eyes.
Worst job. President of the country or president of the Timberwolves?
Oh man, I don't know if I'd want.
Sure
I don't know if I'd
tougher.
Want either job, but
I'm not
you
sure.
Know what it reminds me of? I'm going to go old school. I love horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Jed, are you familiar, or Declan too, with the Amityville series?
No.
Yes, I'm familiar.
The Amityville
I'm,
horror.
I'm not super, but yes,
no. We should actually do Mackie and Judd horror
it.
Movie rewind at some point too.
Yeah.
So it's based loosely around a true story of, I think it's upstate New York, right? It's it's a haunted house on a lake in upstate New York. Where, and the reason why it's haunted is because at one point, one of the kids took a shotgun and killed his whole family.
Oh, okay.
Like a teenage kid.
Mm-hmm.
And families continue to just move into this new house. They get, oh, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah,
the house is fine. Everything, go ahead. It's great. Blank. We're moving into a new house. And then by the end, it's like there's dead bodies everywhere.
It's like
and
Poltergeist.
Like someone gets possessed by the devil. And the Timberwolves are the Amityville Horror House, right? Every time a new family moves in, it's, oh, it's great. Upstate New York, It's a nice. It's there's, we're by a lake. This is amazing. So much land to explore. By the end,
fine. We've remodeled it. Come on in.
And by the end, you're taking an axe to your wife's bedroom. Like, I don't know.
It's but anyway, poor Gerson.
Good luck, Chris Finch. We
Finchy man. It's not. Run, as Phil said yesterday. Run now.
I one last thought on this. I think if you just look at what people say about him and the work that he's done, I think he has a chance to be a good coach here. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's the Messiah that's going to pull the Wolves out of mostly 15 years of dormancy, but it was a weird way to get there. But I think this is going to be a good hire, and it just now depends on how well he can build relationships and how quickly he can get this thing going in the right direction, and whether they can keep their top three protected pick next year.
And off your point, though, the reason why we got here again in such an odd and uncomfortable way is one guy, Glenn Taylor. So, like, that is the one thing, right, that this always comes
he sets the culture
back to. But he also is the guy that said, well, keep Ryan. We're going to keep, right? Like, instead of just saying, like, dude, I am making you the Pobo. Pick your coach now. Yeah. Like, this would have been Chris Finch in 2019. And Ryan might have even stayed on that staff.
The Pobo.
Right?
Yep.
So, anyway. Yep.
So, all right, boys. We got other matters to get to.
We're gonna win, Twins. We're gonna score. We're gonna win, Twins. What's that baseball score?
All right, it's a Twins Tuesday here on Mackie and Judd. The Twins have reported to spring training, and Twins Tuesday, powered by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Business owners out there, we know there's a lot of business owners who are also Minnesota sports fans, and those roads intersect here on the Mackie and Judd Show. How helpful would it be if you had employee training at your fingertips, industry resources that could help your business reach another level of success? That's why Federated Mutual Insurance Company recently launched MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources. Think about the things that involve risk at your company, employee ladders, vehicles. There's a lot of things that you might want to have policies in place for, and that's where MyShield and Federated come in. Go to federatedinsurance.com, and remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right. Doogie floated last week on The Scoop with us on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of Alex Kirilloff starting the season at AAA in all likelihood, because that's the game that front offices play. Mm-hmm. Over the last several decades, is if you just to over explain it, basically, I want to say that there's like 180 days in a baseball calendar year, 180, like from day one all the way to the end of the season, whatever it is, it varies every year, but 180. And if you play in if you're active on the roster for like 175 days or 170 days or whatever that number is, then it's a full year of service time. So by keeping a guy in the minor leagues for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, mm-hmm. you can ensure that he won't hit his first year of service time. And then if you start to do the math, it means you'll get a seventh year of service time before that guy hits free agency. And teams have done this forever. I mean, like the Cubs with Chris Bryant, and the Twins have done this with Berríos and Liriano, and it's just a game that people play. And if you've been following the news this week in sports, Mariners now former CEO Kevin Mather, he jumped on a Bellevue, Washington Rotary Club Zoom call.
How did I miss
that? Say that all again. A what?
So Bellevue is a town in Washington.
Okay.
A Rotary Club Zoom call, right?
And how did I miss the fact Rotary that this guy was such a bleep hole?
Dude, this dude's been employed for 25 plus years by the Mariners and has run the franchise. He's the CEO of the franchise. He's like the Dave St. Peter, basically, mm-hmm. of the maybe even more powerful than Dave St. Peter. Mm-hmm. And jumps on a Zoom call in 2021, mind you, and had no thought that anything he would say in the next 40 minutes would make it to the internet. And it took 2 weeks.
It's unbelievable.
And he jumped on and he made fun of players' inability to speak English properly. And he did a bunch of things and said a bunch. He called Kyle Seager overpaid at one point. Like a bunch of stuff that you would never say publicly, or you should never say privately in some cases. But the number one thing that I think pertains to the Twins here is Kevin Mather basically said, here's like four players that you'll never see in the first 2 weeks of the season because, you know, we want to make sure that we get that service time clock on our side.
Right.
I think Kevin Mather screwed it up for all of these baseball front offices. I don't think you're going to be able to take an Alex Kirilloff, if he has a decent spring, and stash him for 2 or 3 weeks in the minors without a grievance now. You're going to get a handful of grievances. Like, Mariners players were literally told on that Zoom call indirectly by Kevin Mather, oh, yeah, we offered this guy a 6-year contract to buy out a year of free agency, and he rejected it because he thinks he's going to be a superstar. And so we're going to hold him down in the minor leagues for 3 weeks to make sure that he's under our control for 7 years. The fact that he said that out loud in a video that went public, he said the thing that you're not supposed to say as a front office, made it harder for teams like the Twins to stash an Alex Kirilloff for 3 weeks in the minor leagues to start the season.
It's 15 games, right?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think something like that. It's like a dozen.
15 games. Yeah. So Chris Bryant filed a grievance at the time that the Cubs did that to him, and I don't know where things stand with that. And in the new agreement between the owners and players that's going to be negotiated after and probably cause a strike or lockout after 2021, I'm hoping that this rule will be gone. So there might be a perception that this rule, if the Twins do try to use it, won't work because it's going to be washed out. But all of that being said, and I think, Phil, I saw you tweet about this yesterday, and we've talked about this too, but it's worth broaching again. How ridiculous is the fact that Kirilloff, like, he should be a celebrated, hey, this young kid is coming up, and he might not save the day, but he's going to be damn good and, you know, and fun to watch. And we are literally right now engaging in a legitimate discussion about the fact that he's going to need to spend 15 games in the minors to circumvent a rule that makes no sense to be there in the first place.
It's nuts. And it's less of a criticism of the, like, the way that this Mariners CEO went about it. He was so cavalier and arrogant and just, like, said out loud what all these front offices are thinking anyways, which is, we're going to hold this top prospect down for 3 weeks and make him work on his glove. Remember, like, Chris Bryant, hey, he's got a couple things he needs to do better at third base. It's like the Cubs were a 100-loss team the year before.
Yeah.
And so I understand why front offices do it, because if you can get, especially if you're not a top five revenue team like the Yankees or the Red Sox, where, well, whatever, once he hits free agency, we're going to be in the bidding anyways. With some of these franchises, and the Twins have to pick and choose their spots financially, you know, who they can go after. They kiss it. Like, the Rays kiss players goodbye. Once they become free agents, those guys are gone. Even.
Way before, yeah.
Yep, oftentimes.
Like Snell.
So if you're a franchise like the Rays or the Oakland Athletics, if you can hold a guy down for 3 weeks in year one and then get a full, and so you basically get almost a full year out of him anyways, and then you get a full seventh year before he hits free agency.
Yes.
I see why franchises do it. I see why the Twins do it. I hate it. I think it's terrible for baseball. And if you think about how this would apply, let's say in the NFL, like if the NFL had the same stupid, ridiculous system in place, imagine drafting Trevor Lawrence and saying, you know what? Yeah, we got to send him down to football minor leagues for the first month of the season because he's got to work on it. He's got to work on it. I know that we won one game last year, whatever it was, two games. We're the Jaguars, but we're going to make sure Trevor Lawrence just sits down in the minor leagues for a few weeks. Not even like as a backup. It'd be one thing if, all right, Kirilloff's on the roster. He's going to be the fourth outfielder for now because we feel pretty good about the other three guys we have and he's not ready. Like, they're literally going to put him in the freaking minor leagues to start the season to work this system. I get why they do it, but it's terrible for the sport.
Go see him in St. Paul, though. Buy tickets.
I gladly will.
No, but it makes no sense. It makes no sense. And again, it is baseball. It is baseball at every turn. And I don't get this managing to eat itself. Like, everything they can do wrong now, they seem to do wrong. And I just don't get it for the life of me. You know, 15 games, too. Is that not the stupidest? Like, 15 games we have to be cheap for, but then he's coming up and it's going to be great.
Shouldn't the system, I mean, like, I think I know where they were going, which is, well, we don't want to pay a guy major league salary
Then it should be way more than 15, that's the case.
Or it
shouldn't exist, which is what I believe.
Or, like, how does it work in hockey when you have two-way contracts? Or, like, do you get paid the same amount when you're – so that's what baseball deals
with. That's a two-way contract, yeah.
But at the same time, there are entry-level contracts, and that's why it becomes complicated when, like, getting Kirill Kaprizov over, they burned the year last year when they were in the bubble. So now he's going to be a special type of restricted free agent. He's not an RFA. I think it's called like a subsection 12-2.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
It's a very dumb.
It's stupid, oh, what? Too.
It's like, I'm not exact. It's like a subsection 12-2.
It's freedom without
he's like one of,
freedom.
He's like the first free agent of this class who's entering these rights in like 5 years. And then the same thing
happens.
He's
a T-1000 Terminator.
He is. He's like a T-1200
or
something.
Don't sell Kirill short, okay?
And then that's the same problem, too, with their top prospect, Matthew Boldy, who's at Boston College. So if Boston College, who could make the Frozen Four, the best case or the longest case scenario is for him to get here April 4th, well, then that means he would have to burn the first year of his entry-level contract. So then the Wild wouldn't want to do that. But at the same time, if the Wild wanted a push and they want another dynamic player, wouldn't you just say, screw it, we want Matthew Boldy to be ready right now? It's a dumb game.
But baseball desperately needs, and I don't know how, and I think it's going to be painful to get there, but baseball definitely needs a starting point, too, where the entire system of contracts is restructured.
Yeah.
And there's give and take on both sides. I believe, if I'm not mistaken about this, gentlemen, that the same free agency requirement years has been around since free agency started, which I believe was 1976 or so.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Like, think about that.
Yep, that's ridiculous.
It should be 5 years. It should be 5 years, and you are able to hit the market.
And here's the, and some people are going to ask, like, well, why can't Kirilloff just have a salary that he makes? And so here's part of the problem and why baseball is different than some of these other sports. In the NFL, you have 7 rounds of drafts. And in a year where you, like the Vikings last year had a year where they just were overloaded on draft picks. They had 15 drafted rookies. You rarely see that. It's usually, you know, you have your 7 picks. So it's either 7 to 10 players that you would draft. Vikings had 15. Well, all 15 of those guys go to camp, and then, you know, 8 or 9 of them, 12 of them, whatever, make the team. A couple of them are on the practice squad. So they're either in your they're either on your team or your practice squad, and they get a locked salary, or they're not. They're on the couch, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the only places they can be. So you have a roster of 53, and then you have an 8 or a 10 man practice squad, whatever it is now. And those guys, that's your crew that you go with. There's not a triple A, a double A, a single A. In baseball, the draft is 50 rounds, mostly so they can fill out 4 different minor league teams.
Which is changing now a little bit, right?
It is. They've cleaned it up a little.
They've consolidated the
system. It doesn't change a whole lot. So they've gotten rid of, some teams had 2 rookie ball
teams.
Some teams had 2, you know, 8, whatever. They've made it
high
so that
A and low A.
Each team basically has 4 minor league teams, okay. And you have to fill out all those minor league teams. So you have over 100 minor leaguers somewhere in there, around 100 minor leaguers that aren't on your major league team. But then you have a 26 man major league roster and a 40 man roster that you can pull guys from. So there's like different levels of rostering, right?
Yes.
And what teams would say is, well, we got 100 minor leaguers. We can't be paying those guys major league salaries. Like we're gonna go even more broke than we currently are, even though they're billionaires, right?
Sure.
So they have to figure out a way for guys like Kirilloff. Okay, what's a fair way where we can compensate you, but not have to worry about like a clock ticking on your service time? Could you just once you're drafted, maybe depending on how old you are or something, you have 5 years of team control, whether you're in the majors or the minors, period.
Sure.
And you get a signing bonus.
Sure.
And then once that, whether you never play in the majors or whether you play 6 years in the majors, whatever, once that time hits, then you're a free agent.
Yeah.
Right? Or you're a restricted free agent or something like that. But they have to figure out a way so that teams aren't incentivized to keep top high-profile young players in the freaking minor leagues to start seasons. It's so stupid.
And the one thing that this is going to do, if the Twins elect to leave him down, is, as I told Patrick, and we talked about on Unchained yesterday, it is going to embolden the Polad cheap bashers. Mm-hmm. They are going to come out of the woodwork. They are going, see, we told you all. And I think the guy who might get hit the most, Mackey. You will be.
I always get hit.
Yeah. You will be. Later. You will be subjected to endless tweets of, you see, Mackey, the Polads are as cheap as I told you.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is, you can call it cheap, call it whatever you want. You have billionaire owners all throughout Major League Baseball that are all operating not based on how many billions of dollars they have in their net worth, which is what a lot of people think. Oh, they're all billionaires. Why don't they just spend $1 billion on their team, right? No, they're all billionaires, but they're all operating within the business constraints of how much revenue their franchise brings in.
Yep.
And because baseball is based on local, largely on local revenue, when you have markets like New York and LA and Philadelphia and Boston that just have more people buying merchandise, more people watching games on TV, which means the rate that, you know, a Fox Sports North would pay is going to be higher. They might get $100 million more per year because there's more people to broadcast the games to, right? The local revenue is so much more in some of these other markets. You think, well, the Yankees aren't cheap. No, they're just as cheap. They're just as cheap. They're not dipping into their own finance. Like, the Steinbrenners aren't, like, going broke to fund the Yankees. They're bringing in more revenue, and so they're paying more to their players. That's how it works. And, like, people are like, well, what about the Wilfs? The Wilfs will go out and make any move. Yeah, because there's zero chance that they can lose money. The league is literally set up because they have a salary cap and a salary floor that structures how much money goes to players. The Wilfs, like, and I definitely commend them. They're a very fan-friendly ownership group, and they do make big moves, and they should be celebrated for that. But don't celebrate them in a way that says, like, well, look, they're willing to put their grapefruits on the table. Not really. I mean, they're guaranteed to make, like, $250 million a year, regardless of whether they bring in Brett Favre or not 10
the
years
Kirilov,
ago, right?
The Kirilov call is still going to get, you know, it's going to get them out of the woodwork. Those cheap poll ads, this is exactly what they do every year.
Can I say that I do kind of agree, though, that if you feel like you can win the division and win a playoff game this year, those first 2 weeks are going to matter. And if you feel like Alex Kirilov is just right away going to be one of your best players and you can win an extra game or two because he's in your lineup for the first few weeks, then you should be playing to win games this year.
That rule, I can almost guarantee that this current rule is not going to be around after 2021. So ignore it.
So, like, what is it then? Is it like 4 years? Like, are the players going to say we want 4 years of control, and then owners aren't going to want to do that?
Yeah. Well, players would love to hit free agency ASAP, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think you have to take into account a couple things. You have to take into account how long does it take the average player once drafted to incubate and become a major leaguer, or the average player that makes it, anyways, among the top 10 rounds of draft picks or something. But then you have to figure, well, okay, you can get drafted out of high school, or then the next chance you can get, if you don't get drafted out of high school or if you don't sign, then you have to go to college for 3 years, I think it is. And so, obviously, if you draft an 18-year-old versus drafting a 21-year-old, that 18-year-old's likely going to spend more years in the minor leagues because he's 18. A lot of 18-year-olds don't actually emerge from the minor leagues until they're like 24. So I would need control of that guy for sure while he's, like, not ready to play in the majors. Well, why don't you just call him up? Because he's going to get smoked and his career will be altered forever. You know? So, like I'm thinking, well, Brian Dozier went to college. But, like, there's Twins examples all the time where that guy was drafted when he was 18. You forgot about him for
Royce
7
Lewis
years.
Still. He's still down.
Yep. And eventually, and it doesn't mean that he's a failure. Like, it just takes, like, 4 or 5 years for these guys to become major league ready. So you would need to cover that span, and then you'd have to cover, like, a span of a few years in the major leagues.
Yep.
So I
think the players are probably going to ask for big league service time, and then to become to hit the market, my guess is 5 years. 5 years is fair.
From when they got drafted.
From when – no. I think they'll come – I don't – that would be perfect for them, but I think what they're going to agree to is instead of me having to play 6 years and then hit the market, I can do it 5 years after I reach the big leagues.
And how about this? I know this is, now we're getting way in the weeds, but, like, there's a deadline. It's either 4 years from when you're drafted. I think it's 4 years from when you're drafted if you're drafted out of college, or 5 years from when you're drafted out of high school, that you have to be placed on the 40 man.
Yeah.
Or you're exposed to the Rule 5 draft, right?
another great baseball term. Hey, so, it's Rule 5 day. What do we got?
Yeah. So here, just, all right, since we're into these weeds. All right, let's say you've got these deadlines where you've got to put a guy on the 40-man roster so that he can now, that's the next step to get into the major leagues. There's that first deadline. I think you need that. Like, you can incubate in the minors for 4 or 5 years. And then it's kind of time to figure out, all right, what's the deal here?
Yeah,
like, are we doing this or not?
Yep. Fair.
So that's the first one. And then once they get put on the 40-man roster,
mm-hmm.
then I think it's a 5-year service time thing. So you're, because you're forced to be put on the 40-man roster or not, and then you're forced to be put on the active roster, or I'm sorry, then you're forced into free agency five years after you're put on the 40-man roster. Make sense?
All I'm saying is the reason why we probably are not going to have much baseball in 2022 is because
of all this.
That's why.
Also,
so like when we're not playing and there's no games, this conversation, come back to this discussion, that's why we're not playing games.
And think about everything we just did. Like, you can't really have that conversation at a bar with friends. Like, you'll just be the nerd in your group and no one understands. But you can have football conversations. Who should they draft?
Well, right.
Who should they sign? Basketball, who should they draft? Who should they sign? Baseball, it's like, who should they put on their 40-man roster? Who should they?
I once was on a date this summer, and I'd explain what a franchise tag was to someone, and they just still really could not understand.
Oh, that would be
all
confusing if you don't really like sports
that much.
You're
talking about Dak Prescott. It's like, what the hell is a franchise tag? And it's like, well, it's this weird tag that they can place on you, and then they can it again.
You can force a player against their will to stay with your franchise.
It's a weird
But
one.
Baseball easily has the most screwed up thing. It's not even close. The Rule 5 draft, 40-man roster, which is really not the big league roster. Like, think about all of the baseball-y baseball things.
I actually love the franchise tag for baseball, because it would actually help. It would help teams like the Twins and the Rays in that, all right, once this guy, and maybe you only have it for one year or something. Once this guy hits free agency, we have a one-time only where we can franchise tag this guy for, you know, in football, it's the average of the 5 highest paid players at that position for the first time. And then it's like another step up. So, wow. Well, if anyone's even still with this show right now.
you know the last point? We're gonna
win, Twins. Yeah.
Baseball doesn't realize it, but it really does need a salary cap. Because it needs a floor.
It needs a salary structure.
Yeah.
Structure.
But I mean, a cap gives you two things. It gives you a ceiling, but it also, probably just as importantly, it gives you a floor.
Right. And the problem with that is,
like, the Rays would have a floor. The Pirates would have a floor.
Right. But that floor would have to be in a spot where, because again, it's mostly driven by local revenue. You'd have a situation where either the floor and the cap would be $100 million apart, because the Rays might only bring in the Rays might only bring in X amount of revenue, and the Yankees are bringing in 5 times that around out of the Forbes list in front of me.
Yeah.
So to close that gap and make it a competitive window of floor and cap, like the NFL is like a really tight window, right?
Yep.
The Yankees would have to fund the Rays.
Yes. And they do partially now, but
even more.
But what I am saying is, if you have a cap, outright revenue sharing across the board, which the teams wouldn't do, but would be the best thing for the sport.
Yeah. Teams would never do it. You'd have to come up with some sort of national, like, media platform that people would consume.
I'm trying to cause hurt for all sides for the betterment of the game itself, okay? That's what I do. We're gonna win, Twins. We're
gonna score. Amazing.
Golf USA's Golf Show Sale is going on right now. 10,000 golf items discounted to the best prices of the year.
Used equipment 50% off.
Golf USA has brought their amazing golf show deals back to the store
for the biggest sale of the year.
Inventory is limited, so get in early for the best selection. Over 10,000 golf items discounted to the best prices of the year.
All used equipment 50% off.
Don't miss out. Head out right now to Golf USA's Golf Show Sale. Golf USA in Eden Prairie at the corner of Prairie Center and Flying Cloud Drive.
Declan, are you ready for your big,
all right,
shiny moment here?
I think so.
That was indecision right there, Dex.
I have a lot of notes.
And
here.
Now, Phil Mackey updates Judd Zolgad on the latest
preview
happenings from The Bachelorette.
Usually, that's our outdated intro for this segment.
Usually, I like to take notes during the show, and then I try to concise them. I did not do the concising part, so I just have a bunch of notes, I think. But I think I can get this in 60 seconds. I think,
right,
I can.
So Declan updates us
I'm gonna set my
The Bachelor with Matt James. 60 seconds.
Okay.
Clock starting right now.
All right, it's hometown week. We'll start with Michelle. They had a Zoom with her Edina classroom. Really weird setup. The kids asked a lot of questions. I was very uncomfortable by it. But when they met the parents, the dad is concerned over Michelle's heart because she's been through a lot of breakups. But at the end of the hometowns, Michelle admits that she's falling in love with Matt. Matt doesn't say anything back. He just kisses her. Really weird. At Rachel's hometown, they go skydiving, but Rachel has a bad landing. And with her parents, her dad says a few weeks is not enough at all to know someone. But Rachel really wants Matt to ask permission to marriage. And Matt's like, I can't do that yet. Rachel's perturbed. at Bree's hometown. Bree warms up that she's got a really tough mom, and her mom does quiz Matt on a lot of tough questions, but they seem to like him. And she quizzes him, and Bree puts up a wall, though, and says, I'm still trying to figure out if I'm in love with you. But with Serena P, they have a Canadian-themed date because she is Canadian, Judd, and they even played hockey on the date.
They did.
But her sister calls her out and believes it's fake love. You're not smitten with him. And later she admits, you're not my person, and she leaves the show. Matt is crushed. That was Hometown Weeks on Good. The Bachelor.
Well, bravo, Declan. You got through that in like 58 seconds, and it was clear and concise. And as usual, Canada beats the U.S.
So, Jeff, we're down to Minnesota Michelle.
Yep.
We're down to Racist Rachel.
Who I've got a question about.
And we're down to, I would say,
I like Bree.
Beautiful but quiet Bree.
I would want Michelle and Bree. I want Michelle and Bree to be the final two.
Can I ask a question? Sure. So I saw a tweet last night during the show while it was on. I was not watching it. Somebody pointed out that that Edina Michelle is actually went to Woodbury?
She's from Woodbury. She played high school basketball at Woodbury. She's an all-state basketball player.
Okay.
Graduated the same year, 2011. So if it doesn't work with Matt, hit me up, Michelle. But now she lives in Edina, and she's a teacher in Edina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's not from Edina. She's not a native.
No, she's a Woodbury.
She's a Woodbury person.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
Racist Rachel, there's a lot of stories that have come out about her going to Antebellum South parties and...
Postback is Chris, what's his face back?
No.
Well, everything you're seeing now was recorded like 2 months ago. This isn't like live. They're not like, we're live on a date
but
now.
But like, is he being allowed back on the show now? Didn't you say that he came in last week and intro?
No, everything they're showing now is pre-recorded. So they can't just like scrub. Well, I guess they could try and scrub him out.
Okay,
but
here's the thing, though. They did. Did you notice? Was this happening for you last night? Where
I know
was
what
this
you're
weird robot
up.
Narration thing that was happening?
This happened when I was trying to watch Big Sky last week.
So
too.
That's what. Also, our former colleague Seth Auger, he was texting me too because we're both on the same YouTube TV account. He's like, dude, what is going on ABC? Like, I tried. He said Big Sky was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Bachelor was doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think there's an issue, Judd, with ABC on YouTube TV the last couple weeks. Where parts of episodes, it's like it defaults to the blind person setting. So you get this automated voice that's explaining to you what's happening throughout the show.
Matt leans in to kiss Rachel.
Rachel,
smitten.
Oh my God, how annoying.
Open the door.
Matt takes a step forward.
I've heard that before, yeah.
It's freaky. Well, so I thought that that the Bachelor producers were so scrambled over the Chris Harrison thing that they deleted and they did this. I'm dead serious. I thought that's what was happening. I was like, some idiot decided not to have a new narration. They just put Microsoft speech function on. I thought that's what was happening.
This is the final rose.
Until I saw...
Ladies, please get your things and leave the
Matt,
house.
Matt, how are you feeling today? I thought that's what was happening.
The Rocky 3 robot thing?
Happy birthday, Polly. Who gets the last rose, Matt?
See you, Michelle. They got the Rocky robot.
See you, love Michelle.
So this happened. We got this Big Sky as a show. It's about like, it's like a murderer show about small town in Montana.
Oh my God.
It's a really weird show, but I'm hooked on it. Yeah. And last week, the first 25 minutes of this episode were all like, there's a robot narrating. And we couldn't tell. For the first 5 minutes, it was like, oh, is this like part of the show? Like,
right.
This is weird. This is super weird. I don't know. So if there's listeners out there, is this just happening for YouTube TVers on ABC? Or is this happening for other people that have other
Someone
cable?
Else tweeted me that she said that she was watching on Hulu and it was doing the same thing.
Okay.
So.
It's going to be an ABC issue of some kind.
Yeah.
I think it's
an ABC situation. But yes, I thought the moron producers at The Bachelor literally hired a Microsoft speech thing to replace Chris Harrison. I thought that's what they did. They couldn't find any, like, narration and voiceover work. Pretty easy to do. Like, that would have been pretty easy to dub that over. But no, I guess we couldn't do that.
So Minnesota Michelle, you got Bree, and you got racist Rachel here in the final three, Judd. Mm. And pretty soon we're gonna be down to the one. Now we almost had a situation where Rachel her date was skydiving, and they came in a little hot, like her and the instructor.
Yeah, her deck
came in a little hot. That would have been one way to get from three to two and just sort of solve a problem
right? Oh, well, we get the women tell all next.
That might have leaked out.
The women tell
back
all
during the taping
she
period.
She died during the skydiving.
She'd be dead.
The women tell all next week and then fantasy suite after that.
Wait, what's the one next week?
The women tell all. So that's where they bring all the contestants back into a studio.
Okay.
And then Matt comes to, and they basically have like a little gossip session over like, you were mean to me. No, I'm still in love with you. Dude, blah, blah, blah.
Here's my theory on that. Okay. Cause they do, once they get to the final couple weeks, they do a lot of live stuff with Chris Harrison. So they'll do like for the finale week, Chris Harrison will sort of be in a live studio or they'll like pre-record stuff closer toward the end of the run. I think they have to throw out some of the Chris Harrison stuff that they recently recorded. Like if they just did one of these things in the last couple weeks, and I think they're trying to stretch this thing out another week to find another host so that Chris Harrison can.
Do you think he's gone?
I think there's a chance Chris Harrison steps down.
Oh, man.
I think there is.
He deserves to be punished because
he's great. Nobody is better at their job than Chris Harrison as the Bachelorette host.
I would have loved to be the next Chris Harrison. I think I would have thrived as the next Chris Harrison.
Hold on a second. You're telling me Keith Morrison.
Sorry.
Mm-mm. On Dateline with a surprising fetish.
I think
are you
great.
Telling me that some Chris Harrison say. Is better than Keith Morrison?
I think so.
And that's Sleepy Town. No one saw it coming.
Some might say she was dead on arrival.
You're telling me Andy Cohen in the clubhouse, not better than Chris?
Chris Harrison was like, the original Andy Cohen.
This is a Mount Rushmore right now. This is a Mount Rushmore situation and statement that you just made.
Mount Rushmore of people who are great at their jobs.
Yes.
I would say the sign language national anthem guy at the Super Bowl pregame this year is on the Mount Rushmore. That guy was rocking it.
I don't remember seeing him.
This is great. Chris Harrison is definitely on that list. I didn't put more thought into it. But the way that Chris Harrison, they have the rose ceremonies every week, Judd, where you've got, let's say, 10 roses for 12 women. And so you always get down to the end where there's one rose left and there's like three women and only one's going to get it. And where Chris is so brilliant, he walks in every single time.
Ladies,
this is the final rose. Matt? And then he walks away.
And then comes back. Ladies.
Hold on a second.
Ladies, I'm sorry. You're not getting a rose, please. Please say goodbyes and pack your things.
Hold on a second. That's what makes him great?
Or he'll come out of nowhere when, like, Bachelor Matt is having a hard time with his decision or, you know, oh my gosh, I just went through this thing. And
Matt, what's going on?
Chris will sit down.
Who replaces him?
The tie will be off. The button will be undone. Yeah, he'll sit down and he'll purse his lips and say, hey, Matt, how are you doing?
Yeah.
What is he, his dad? So if he leaves, who replaces him?
Me.
Little.
I'll be great. I'd be a great Chris Harrison.
I think Chris Berman would be a good change up.
Just bring it out. How are you feeling? Whoop!
Serena P's here.
Nope! Whoop!
Could happen.
I'm glad the Canadian left. Good for her.
All right. That's a wrap on this episode of Mackie and Judd.
We fixed baseball.
Write that down, predictions, and an accountability session on tomorrow's show. And don't forget daily discussions about your Minnesota Vikings on Purple Daily as well.